Chapter 41. Sing. He had trained on ships back home, as anyone at his rank would. He'd spent weeks sleeping in a tight cabin and eating elbow to elbow with his fellow officers. But at the end of training, he went home, back to Laconia and to Natalia and the monster. The weekends after a training run had been some of the best he'd ever had, waking up late with Natalia beside him. Before the monster came, they'd had quarters with a bedroom on the third story and a folding wall that they could pull back to get fresh air and the view. He remembered lying in that bed, looking out over the city as twilight fell. Vast clouds turning gold and violet on the horizon, and the alien construction platforms glittering among the stars. He'd laid his head against Natalia's as yet unoccupied belly, and thought about the ships being made up above the planet's atmosphere. How one day he might command one. It had seemed glorious at the time. He'd known without checking the dates when his exile on Medina Station had lasted as long as a full training tour. Something in the back of his mind had been anticipating the end of low ceilings and false skies. Each day he found himself growing more anxious. And it wasn't only the threat from local terrorists or the mounting pressure he felt to reopen the traffic through the gates. It was his flesh itself, grown accustomed to these long isolations having an end, expecting relief and not getting it, wanting his wife and his child and their sky, even as his conscious mind knew the first two would come much later, and the last, perhaps never. It was possible that he would live his whole life and die as the governor of Medina Station, and never see a real cloud again. He'd known that from the moment he'd met with the High Consul, all those months ago. It hadn't started chafing until just now. The draft of his monthly report was open on his monitor, his personal journal inset in a smaller window. Everyone above him in the chain of command could see his journal if they chose to, but his report gave him the chance to summarize his experiences, to say what, from his perspective, was important. His fingers hovered over his keyboard, where they had been since the memory of Natalia and their old bedroom and the clouds had intruded on his thoughts. He wished he could pause longer. Many of the locals persist in referring to the transfer of control in Sol's system as a war. This kind of rhetoric has emboldened dissident factions on Medina Station. Given the escalating violence employed by the dissidents, I have elected to maintain the closed gate policy until the arrival of the typhoon. Ships coming in from the colonial systems have too great a potential to smuggle in relief supplies and reinforcements for the recalcitrant elements here. He paused again. A small, angry voice in the back of his mind said, "In the event of another large-scale attack on the station, I recommend pulling Laconian forces back to the storm and venting Medina Station." He pushed the thought away without writing it down. It wasn't only that it was immoral, though that should have been enough. It was also a statement of weakness. An admission that he could not cut the rot out of this tree without burning it all. And still, the elegance of it made it hard to turn away. If Holden and his allies had been held to truly Laconian standards, they would be dead. It was that simple. If Sing treated them with the respect and dignity with which Duarte treated him, to which Sing held himself, removing them all from the equation would just be proper discipline. But he had grown to understand that they weren't Laconian. Not yet. They hadn't had time to understand the necessity of the Empire. Holden's arguments were more than proof of that. He had to be patient with them. Firm, but patient. He had to keep them from hurting themselves or others until the ripples of this admittedly vast change had calmed, until the new patterns of life had become normal for them. While I am certain that James Holden knows more of the local dissident factions than he is presently admitting, he is not our only resource on that matter. His experience and expertise in the anomaly that Admiral Trejo reported make him a genuinely unique asset on that issue. For that reason, I have chosen to break off his interrogation here and remove him immediately to Laconia for debriefing in whatever context the High Council considers most appropriate. Meaning that the terrorist figurehead would see Laconia before he did. Might even come across Natalia and the monster before they came out to Medina, if the High Council chose to treat him gently. Holden would smell the rain, see the sunrise, and Singh would be here, in this spinning can in an eerie non-space that didn't even have stars to make it feel like home. It was a deep irony that being a prisoner and being in power could be so mismatched. "Damn it," he said to his empty office, then leaned back, running one hand across his scalp. There was so much more to put into the report. The preparations he'd made, was making, for the stationing of the typhoon and the additional personnel that it was bringing to Medina. The victories he'd had in rooting out the bombers and repairing the damage they had done. His schedule for coordinating and controlling the traffic between the worlds. The Empire would succeed or fail on the back of its logistical planning, and his implementation of the High Council's vision was actually quite detailed. Only just now, something itched in his soul, and he couldn't concentrate. He wondered whether Duarte ever suffered the same base animal distractions. It seemed he would have, but Singh couldn't imagine it. He closed the draft report, opened his personal journal wide enough to edit, and then closed it too. The walls themselves seemed to push the air at him. It was like an optical illusion of something falling that never quite fell. "Damn it," he said again, less forcefully this time. The reports coming in from Saul were distracting too. Trejo's private reports tracked through the gathering storm, but they were meant for Duarte. Singh wished he could read them himself. There were so many questions. Whether the Tempest had taken any lasting damage in its first foray against the enemy, whether anything had changed with the anomaly that had appeared after Palace. When Trejo anticipated the next battle would come, and if he believed it would be the last one. There were the public feeds, of course. The positions of the combined navies were, for the most part, a known thing. The larger cruisers were impossible to hide, and the massive Union ships they called void cities. But there might be stealth ships lying in wait, or fields of torpedoes launched into a quiet orbit, counting on the vastness of space to conceal them until they burned to life. Just looking at the declassified tactical map made Singh's flesh crawl. The vast cloud of the enemy shifting through the gravity-bent space of inner planets like a swarm of insects with a single hated enemy, and the Tempest alone in its simple course. Trejo wouldn't evade, and he wouldn't retreat. He had his orders, and he would follow them. Singh reminded himself of how powerful the Tempest was, how resilient. The High Council wouldn't have committed the ship to a path that led to embarrassment for the Empire and death for Trejo. And yet, what if he'd miscalculated? Or what if Earth or Mars or the Union had been behind the wave of lost time? Or, the speculation was pointless. Worse, it was self-indulgent. Even if he knew everything else he needed to put into his official report, it was going to have to wait. He had to get out of his offices, if only for a while. He had to collect himself. Overstreet answered the connection request almost at once. "Governor? I will need a security detail to my office at once." Overstreet's silence was less than a heartbeat.
Is there a problem, sir?
No. I want to inspect the docks. When will there be sufficient security for that? If Overstreet was surprised or annoyed, there was no sign of it in his voice.
I'll have a detail to you in 5 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Singh said, then dropped the connection. The Lightbreaker was a cargo ship that had been in the Union's fleet. A small vessel, but fast and with an efficient drive. All of the ships and their crews were guests of the Empire until the Typhoon arrived, but not the Lightbreaker. Of all the ships on the station manifest, that was the one best suited to act as a prisoner transport. It was slated to push off in half an hour's time, with James Holden in its brig, and a crew Singh had chosen from the gathering storm. And Singh found he very much wanted to be there when the first ship left Medina Station for Laconia. The first transit to happen while he was in charge of the ring space, his watch. He straightened his uniform and checked himself in the mirror before stepping smartly into the outer offices. He heard the change when he walked into the room. The men and women under his command, making certain that he saw them busy. 8 Marines in armor were waiting outside, along with a driver, who wasn't in power armor but did carry an assault rifle beside her in the cart.
"The dock, sir," the driver asked.
"Berth K-18, Singh said, then sat back as the cart started off. The Marine escort loped along as fast as the cart could drive, and with the sense that they weren't anywhere near an uncomfortable pace. The hallway had been cleared, and guards stood at the intersections with weapons drawn. It was like traveling through the dream of a tube station that had grown out in all directions until there wasn't even the promise of finding a way up to the surface. A woman with a heart-shaped face peered past the guard's shoulder, straining to catch a glimpse of him, and Singh waved at her. Let the civilians see that their governor was here, not hiding away in his office. If he wasn't scared of the terrorists, the loyal faction of the population wouldn't be either, or less so, anyway. And still, he did wonder how many of those people he passed would have been as happy to see him dead. He wondered if the girl with the heart-shaped face would have shot him if she'd had the chance. There was no way to be certain. Would never be a way to be totally certain, or at least no way other than... At the end of the drum, they left the spin gravity behind. The Marines shifted gracefully into a protective star formation with him at its center. He had seen images of the terrorists' attack, twisted metal and shattered ceramic, flakes of carbon lace floating in the air like black snow. Passing through the space now, what struck him was the stink of it. Welding torches and burning lubricant oil, overheated wiring, and the back-of-the-throat bitterness of exhausted fire suppressants. They did this to their own station. Just spite me, he thought. And then, no, not their own. Mine. This, more than anything else, proves they can't be trusted with the future. This station is mine. They passed by the crowd of people waiting for permission to visit their ships, the Marines alert for any sign of violence, and passed by without so much as a scowl. At the berth, the guards held Holden at the airlock, assuming that Singh had come because he wanted to inspect the prisoner before he left. On the float, Holden looked younger. The lines in his face softened, and his hair stood wildly out from his head. He could see what the man had looked like as a boy. Singh nodded.
Governor, Holden said.
He made it just polite enough to make it clear he was impatient without actually demanding offense be taken.
Captain Holden, I wish you a safe journey.
Thanks.
Laconia is a beautiful place.
Not sure I'm going to be seeing the nice parts of it, but I'm open for a pleasant surprise. If you cooperate with the High Council, you will be treated well, Singh said. We are an honorable people. No matter what you think, we were never your enemy. Holden's smile was weary. Okay, that's bullshit, but I'm too tired to fight about it, he thought. Singh nodded, and the guards guided the prisoner away. The airlock closed behind him. 15 minutes later, the lightbreaker left dock and burned hard for the Laconia Gate, with Holden aboard. Singh heard Overstreet's report in the security office rather than his own. The walls were a pleasantly neutral gray-green that matched everything. The only decorations were a small potted fern and a framed piece of calligraphy in red, black, and gold that listed the High Council's 9 moral tenets. Overstreet himself sat behind his desk with a physical solidity that made it seem like he'd grown there. Singh stood looking down at the man, rather than take the seat and posture of a visitor. It might be Overstreet's office, but it was all Singh Station. I'm expecting some unrest after the news comes back from Seoul, Overstreet said. People don't like seeing their team lose. I'm trying to get ahead of that. Channel it into something we can control, not let it turn into something that can gain momentum. That's wise. Are you seeing a reaction to the news about the underground losing their hiding place? Not among the general population, no. But it meant a lot to the security force. We knew it was here someplace, but actually finding the hub and shutting it down, it's a major step forward. Without a physically isolated space, it's hard for the terrorists to coordinate, and it lets us move into the next phase, identification. How many have you found? Singh asked. Overstreet spread his massive hands. 15, for certain. Maybe 20. The level of internal corruption within the local population can't be understated. My best estimate is that a third of our operating personnel are at least open to working against us. Singh let the assessment sit for a moment, watching his outrage at the ingratitude and arrogance of the locals flare like it was happening outside himself. When he was sure he wouldn't curse, he spoke. That's unacceptable, Singh said. Changing that has to be a top priority. Didn't mean to suggest I was accepting it, just reporting in on where it stood. I've put in double and triple checks, random audits, all the internal security procedures I can, but this is going to be something we struggle with until we start getting regular commerce open again. Once we can start breaking up the old guard here, I expect to see these problems fall away. Wash out the bad, bring in the new, like that. Singh made a small sound of acknowledgement, neither approval nor condemnation. The dock attack was what led us to their nest, Overstreet said. But even there, I'm fairly sure some information isn't getting passed up the chain to us. And where do we stand on that investigation? Overstreet's ice-blue eyes looked away. Permission to speak freely, Governor. Granted. It'd be going a lot better if you hadn't shipped my best resource back home. Holden was central to the conspiracy. The man's a murderer. And I'm still not 100% certain what the aim of the attack was. To damage the storm while it was still in dock, Singh said. Maybe, Overstreet said. But why? In preparation for something? Or was it to degrade the oxygen supply and force us to open shipping before we're ready? Or was it to destroy the air gap server or the secondary power storage or one of the 8 warehouses that got scraped out by the blast? Or was it just a propaganda move to make Laconia rule look weak or provoke a crackdown as a way to recruit new insurgents? It did all of those things, Singh said. But which ones it intended matters, sir. Understanding the mind of the enemy is what lets me do my job.
Singh heard the frustration in Overstreet's tone. That was fair. Part of his error in removing Tanaka had been putting Overstreet into position without the training and preparation time he should have had, and with the underground running circles around them, the man couldn't feel he was doing a good job. Nothing degraded morale like the sense that the potential for excellence was being denied. Happily, Singh was in a position to address that point right away. He took out his hand terminal, opened the message that had occasioned this particular visit, took off his personal security encryption, and passed it to Overstreet. The young man appeared on Overstreet's monitor. Wide, slightly feverish eyes, unruly hair. The lens and the perspective made the bent nose seem larger than it actually was.
"Hoi, Boss Meng. Something big going down," Zhou Dao said. "I only got my part, but it's about the sensor arrays. Parle, Tui Mei, aber keep it quiet. Voltaire finds out I know you, and you'll see my water in your faucets, yeah?"
Overstreet's eyes narrowed to slivers of ice. His lips had thinned to a single dark line.
"Well, that's interesting," he said.
"The Belters aren't the only ones with a network," Singh said.
"Not anymore.
See that your debriefing isn't observed. This time, we'll be ahead of the bastards."
"May mean pulling personnel off the engineering investigation," Overstreet said.
"This is the most important thing now," Singh said. Overstreet nodded slowly, lost in thoughts and calculations of his own. When he sighed, it was like a dying man's breath.
"We're holding this station with just the crew we carried out here on the gathering storm, and a few extras that Admiral Trejo could spare us. And this station is a damn lot bigger than our ship was."
"Is that a problem for you, Overstreet?"
"It's just that we do have a great selection of number one priorities, don't we, sir?"